My name is Kirsty Rayner, and I am obsessed with all things mindset, meditation, business, and helping you to overcome those mindset blocks and magical breakthroughs in every season of life. I'm a multiple business owner, accredited transformational and mindset coach, Vedic meditation teacher, a yogi with 10 years marketing experience on paper, but informally, I'm obsessed with growth, a pale rosé wine lover, chocoholic, and your new bestie. We get into all the secrets and hacks to get you in an abundant mindset. So go and grab a coffee, get cozy, get comfortable. This is the Mindset and Me podcast. Welcome to a very special episode of the Mindset and Me podcast. I cannot believe it has been a year of the podcast. My goodness, my baby is 1 year old. What a year it has been. I've been so humbled and honored to have some of the most incredible guests on my podcast. And it really, really wouldn't have been possible without you. For everyone listening, for all those who've subscribed, for all those who've shared everything, it helps so much. And so I really wanted to put together a really special episode. Now, I have had so many incredible guests. I've had almost 50 episodes, and it's really, really hard for me to choose exactly who to have on this episode. So I started to look at different themes that I thought could be really, really interesting for you to have all in one place, such as body positivity, how to navigate our way through the digital world, women in business, of course, and also mindset. So what I then did was look at different episodes and pull out bits of information that I thought would be super, super relevant to you. I'm so grateful that you are here listening to this today. Truly, it means so much to me. So get really cozy, get a nice coffee, maybe have a glass of wine, put this on in the bath or on your commute. And I really want you to listen to all of these incredible guests and their amazing pearls of wisdom. For the first theme, I wanted to look at body positivity. My goodness, we are all still living in a pandemic. Our bodies have all changed. Our mindsets have all changed. Our way of living and consumption has completely changed. And honestly, these three people are exceptional in changing your mindset. They have the most incredible stories, and I am honored to have had them as guests. So I've put together some little clips from Jules Von Hepp, Sophie Hughes, and Jada Caesar. I hope you enjoy.
I'm thinking, how am I actually speaking to myself? How is this relationship with myself affecting what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis? Because, you know, you can be having phone calls, you can be having meetings, you can be out with friends and appear, it's all good on the surface. You're like that swan. But in the moments in the bathroom, the moments in the mirror, the moments when you're chatting to yourself, are you being nice to yourself or are you being a little bitch to yourself? Because actually the person, and something that I actually really have discovered this week, is the person that you talk to the most through your whole life is yourself. Mm-hmm. So step it up and be kind to yourself, be nice to yourself, be good to yourself, because at the end of the day, who's going to benefit from it, babe? You.
I love that so much. And you're so candid and generous when you talk about it. But I know, I mean, we know each other on a very personal level, my dear friend.
Almost too personal.
Anyway, that's for another podcast. But, you know, to get to where you are today, that was a long, long journey for you, right? And like, getting to that stage, it's not kind of like linear, is it? There's lots of like setbacks and fallbacks that you encountered, and just being human and kind of having that, oh my God, you question yourself again. And is this the right thing? And it would be really good to understand sort of what you did when those thoughts came up on this journey.
I think, you know, turning the ship, and it is such a massive ship, to get to the point where you actually like who you are, is not something to be scoffed at or overlooked. You know, I think people have this perception of, oh God, you just got to wear white linen and light some joss sticks and all of a sudden you'll find that inner peace. Well, that is not the case. It's not the case. God knows I tried. I've got a bloody wardrobe full of linen but didn't do anything for that. But it's about repetition, and it's about slow, small changes that actually make a huge effect 5 years down the line. What you do on the day-to-day basis, sure, might be affecting present self, but it's really going to affect future self.
So I guess, you know, you've gone through the surgery and you're seeing like the wonderful side of it, but then also you're saying you have to like fall back in love with your body. Like, what's it like in the process, like right back then?
Yeah, it's crazy. I should add, because I always forget to add this bit and I get so many questions afterwards, that Oscar is absolutely thriving. He's like the cutest, happiest, most amazing little boy. Loves his little liver. We are liver buddies, so it's a very happy story. Yeah, in the moment, it's hectic. It's terrifying, to be honest. I think there were conversations with my brother, which is Oscar's dad, prior to surgery. He's my older brother, and he was quite concerned about how is this going to impact your modeling? How is this going to impact your body image? And, you know, he rightly so was that older brother had those concerns. But ultimately, Oscar's life was on the line, and that was kind of irrelevant in the end. It wasn't important. But I remember looking at my scar for the first time. I remember taking the bandages off for the first time and being like, wow, nothing can quite prepare you for that. I mean, it's, you know, it's 7.5 inches, 8 inches down my stomach, and it's there. And, you know, it was very dark at the time and it was bleeding and everything. I remember taking the bandages off and just crying in the bathroom and then going downstairs to my sister. My sister's the best. She's not only my best friend, but she just has this beautiful ability to put a funny spin on things. So I went downstairs and I showed it to her and she went, "Why is it wonky?"
Oh no. You're like, great. Cheers, sis. Yeah,
that was
great.
The response, which was brilliant, and it was exactly what I needed in the moment.
Yeah.
And it took me a while. It really did. It took me a long time to adapt to having a scar. I think particularly when you have a surgery that you don't necessarily need, it just adds another layer to it of you've got this scar and there's just so much to process because it was such a shock to the system. It's not like I'd had an ongoing illness or I had time to prepare or expect it. But it took me a little while. It definitely took me a little while to get in a bikini. I was terrified of the conversations I would have to have. And I just wasn't in a space of owning it and being proud of it. But a little time passed, and really movements on social media around body positivity. And this is why I'm so passionate about body positivity on social media, because there were some key players, Chessie King and the Birds Papaya, who I followed religiously. Mm. And the two of them really taught me that it was okay to embrace exactly where my body was at, and it was okay to embrace the weight gain. And I really now want to pay that forward.
With the kind of mindset I had, why other women can't feel that way too, and notice that around us was such conflicting messaging about, you know, you're never good enough. Like, buy this mascara because your eyelashes right now are not good enough. Buy this jacket because it will make you feel better and look beautiful than you currently are. And all these ideas just felt, this like marketing, which I understand now on the outskirts, just felt so wrong. And that was our standard. And so I remember coming in at the same time that Instagram had just launched and decided to create not knowing it at the time, but now I look back, I was like marketing a different type of idea. And the idea was that you are perfect right now. You're beautiful right now. A lot of it is in our mindset. And I would fuse in my psychology degree into the little insight I had. And I would also be a representation of a girl that was basically myself in some ways, because that was the girls I was talking to. And I think off the back of that, it just kind of rolled organically. I was creating content without really thinking about it. It was something I enjoyed. And the content would be me and what I was wearing and where I was going. And I would then create these editorial style images of myself, which when I got into the modeling world, realized it was like test shoots, we would call it. So I was almost like creating these, setting up my own photo shoots and, you know, connect with photographers on Instagram and send them my mood boards and ideas and basically try and sell them this new idea of beauty. And most of them were like, that's weird. I will never shoot like a curvy model. It was because of the way the size I was. And then some were really receptive to it and was like, oh my God, this is actually a really interesting concept. And so off the back of it, I think because I was one of the first, and it was quite a new idea in the UK especially, my images started to gain traction. And then before I knew it, I was asked to be the face of the first ever plus size show during London Fashion Week. And I was scouted by two modeling agents, one of which was one of the best in the UK and became a part of their very small first plus size division. And from there, I went on and moved to New York and worked out there and lived out there and then lived in Australia and did Europe and just modeled around the world and took my audience with me and showed them the kind of things that we could achieve. And like my wins was their wins. And, you know, it just was such a beautiful cycle of like support and encouragement. And as much as I was helping them, they were helping me. So, yeah.
Wow, thank you. There's so much detail in there. And I think as well, to just reflect back to you that you talk in such a, with ease, right? And that, you know, you were doing this thing and you kind of traveled, but actually you took groundbreaking steps within the industry and put yourself out there so boldly. And I really want to know, you know, for somebody maybe who's younger, who's listening to this, what was coming up for you? What was the mindset piece around this?
Good question. I think it was, I was such in a tunnel vision that I wouldn't stop until every girl felt comfortable in their body or advertising completely changed their narrative. Like if there was ever a brand that was promoting an idea that felt one, outdated, unrealistic or completely ludicrous and actually really detrimental to people's mental health, I would want to work with them and change that. It did not make sense. I was working with charities Young Minds at the time, so I was like helping, consulting on some of their campaigns and just raising awareness to what they did because they did really fantastic work with young people. And I think at the time it was just this relentless vision of I'm not stopping. And because I had seen that a little old me could, because I didn't come from a fashion background. I didn't get into the role because of any contacts that my parents had or anything. It was pure determination and relentlessness, basically. And because I didn't stop and I saw the effect it was having and the fact that, like, you know, I was the face of this small fashion show that led on to then being the face of, like, a billboard in Piccadilly with L'Oreal with their slogan changing from because I'm worth it to we are all worth it. Because we're all worth it. And like that for me was like, oh, okay. It was just so captivating and exciting and like we could make change.
The next theme is how to navigate our way through a digital world. I, for one, sometimes find this difficult. I can be easily triggered. I can find things very, very overwhelming very quickly. And especially when you're going through difficult times in your life, you know, we always see everyone share all the good stuff, don't we? But actually, in a real world, we need to come back to our core internal functioning and our internal beliefs to really remember who we are and that we're all just human and we're all navigating our way through this life. So I wanted to look back at some of my amazing guests and pull together some excerpts that I think you're going to find really, really useful. In this section of the podcast, I, of course, went to Estée Lalonde, Danielle Pisa, Sophie Herman, and my girl, Em Roberts. I hope you enjoy.
Well, I mean, all of the experiences. I remember the first time getting invited to an event. It was an afternoon tea.
Wow.
And it was like, oh my God, I've never saw, didn't even know what an afternoon tea was. And they gave us loose leaf tea. And you know, when you go to a fancy place, they give you the strainer thing that you put the tea in. And I poured the leaves in without straining them. And there was like all these tea leaves in my mug. And I just thought, I am so out of place.
Oh, you know, we've all been there.
Yeah, like so many experiences like that, which just completely took me out of my comfort zone. Like that's just the first one I could think of. And just being challenged in so many different ways. And even like I always think about the fashion. I don't consider myself super fashionable these days, but I remember thinking like everyone in London is just so cool and look what they're wearing, look what kind of clothes they put together. And I just felt like a fish out of water, honestly. And I was just always trying to keep up with everything around me. And just over time, that kind of, you know, all of those things just made me who I am.
For me, like dancing, yes, it was my job, but I feel so grateful that I could do a job that I like genuinely loved. Because a lot of people, I get it, and you know, we have to earn money to live, to be able to do the things that we want to do. And I feel so blessed, and I'll be forever grateful that for me, what literally started as a hobby, I went to my first ballet class at the age of like 2.5. So I will always be grateful that literally a hobby, and then I was that little girl that was like dreaming of dancing on stage, that became a reality for me. And then the opportunities as well that came with it. I mean, yes, I worked really hard at it, and I went to a full-time ballet college. So I guess, you know, that it was the most that it kind of became my whole life, because I did it all during the day, every day. But then outside of when I was at ballet college, I was like off, like living my life and doing other things. It was like, when I'm in there, I'll give 100% focus. But when I'm out and I'm doing something else, I'm doing something else. And I think that's what actually helped keep the love alive, and the passion and the energy and motivation, because I wasn't draining myself all the time. It was like, I'll give that 100% when I'm there focusing on it and doing it. And when I'm not, and it's giving me that chance to like recharge. I had a really exciting career as a dancer. Mm-hmm. I just feel like I never really want to talk about it that much, because now I never want to be that sort of person that's like, well, guys, I've done this and that and that. You know, no one likes a show off, but I had fun. Oh. I had a good time.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. You're so humble. Like, even us being friends, I feel like I didn't know all of that till maybe a year into our friendship, and me just being Northern, like, what? Who did you dance with?
Do you know what? That happens actually quite a lot with friends. Like, if we're out and a song plays and they go, oh God, I love this. Like, I'm like, oh yeah. Like, and also it's so nice. This person's actually really nice. And they're like, what? I'm like, oh yeah, like, I dance for them loads. Like, I did this music video. I did that. And then they're like, where? And then I get up YouTube and they're like, oh my God, that's you. Like, yeah, like, I've seen the video loads of times. I'm like, yeah, and that's been me. Every time you've seen the video, that's been me. But I guess as dancers, we're not there to take the limelight. Like, I think that is part of what makes a good dancer. Like, you're there to do your job. You're there to embellish the artist and to make them look great, make the whole performance look great. But I'm not there for the limelight, and I'm not there to make it about me. It's a massive, like, group effort. And that's why I think a lot of really successful dancers... We as well, like, I'm still a dancer, I'm not really, but you know, we don't really, that bragging thing. And I think in today's society, a lot of it, especially with social media, is all about like showing off, and it does not come naturally to me at all, like, to show off and say I've done this, that and that. I just think, let my talent, let success speak for itself.
So actually, one thing that I also picked up at the Swiss health retreat, which I've never done before, and I always kind of made fun of, was yoga. And I hated it in the beginning. And then I really just started to use this 1 hour or 70 minutes as a time where I can actually switch off. Ideally, you know, it really depends on the teacher. So some teachers can make you hate almost everything. But with the teachers that I chose afterwards, and the music they used and the flows they've done, that was an amazing way just to, find that time for yourself, and also just, you know, completely switch off everything that happens around you. Because as soon as you're out of this room, you have your phone again, you can, like, all of your friends tell you everything that's been happening. And I really value now just having that switch off time, because you're great at meditation. I know that. I'm not just there yet. But I love, for example, I love sound healing. That makes me feel like I'm drifting in the universe. And I've just tried LSD or something. No, I've never tried LSD, but like, it must be amazing. So things like this. But to be honest, like, my girlfriends are, it's very Carrie Bradshaw, but my girlfriends are my therapists. And that really helped a lot. But also, I was lucky enough to be able to work a lot, and then obviously with my job, which includes filming and go, and then I also threw myself into Celebs Go Dating, for example, which was something that I would have never considered doing before. But these things, like that, a breakup can also lead to, you know, another open door. Like, obviously I would have never done a dating show in a relationship, but also things that, like, the ex-boyfriend, for example, would judge a lot, that I wanted to do, I now just did it by myself and I actually have a lot more success.
I think one of the big things that comes to mind right away is like change. The idea of change is extremely scary for a lot of people. And for me, absolutely. Change is scary. I'm a planner. I like to be in control. I like to know what's happening next. And I think, you know, obviously moving abroad to any new city is really scary and the change can be a bit overwhelming. So, you know, when I look back at that first year of moving abroad, there was a lot of emotions, there was a lot of anxiety, there was a lot of overwhelm, sort of everything was happening, it felt like at once. My husband and I were engaged, we were sort of trying to figure out, you know, where we were getting married, were we having a wedding? I was trying to figure out if I could work for myself across the pond. I had no idea if my blog, my audience, my content would translate. Not to mention, I had no network here. So it was a really slow build. And I think it took time. If I could go back and tell myself to just be patient, I would, because I just remember feeling really rushed to building that network and finding people to connect with and being able to have girlfriends that you can call up and say, hey, let's grab a coffee. Like, I was just craving connection. And the fact of the matter is, I was brand new to a city and that was all going to take a lot of time. So there was a lot of overwhelm, a lot of emotions sort of going all at the same time. I think the second thing that's come up for me, especially in the last 4 years, I guess the catalyst to that would be sort of now making the jump to working for myself, is that negative self-talk piece. And I know this is something that you and I have talked about. And I know for you too, just with launching like your podcast, there's, you know, some fear there. There's some self-doubt. So I say that it's come up for me, especially in the last 4 years, because I'm now working full-time for myself. I create content and I share things out into the ether. And it's like you throw things at the wall and see what sticks. And it can be really, really challenging. And that negative voice creeps in. And that's something that I've always struggled with, by the way. So that's not a new thing for me. But I just think in the last 4 years, with going through so many shifts and changes and evolvements, that this voice definitely is sometimes louder than the voice that I need, which is just feeling confident and being my own cheerleader. So I have good weeks and bad weeks. I have good days and bad when it comes to this. You know, you just question yourself. You wonder if people care about the content you're putting out there. You wonder, can I do this? Then you're doing the comparison thing on Instagram and social media. And I would say that's the other factor that's sort of amplified this, is obviously social media. It's amazing in so many ways, but it also is so public and everybody's accolades are out there. And, you know, there's the flip side to that. But I think oftentimes on Instagram, we see all of the amazing things. We see people's filtered life. And so my hope is that we all sort of keep that in mind and know that there are things kind of going on behind closed doors. And, you know, there are failures and there are some dips, you know, and there are times of feeling low. But I think what's cool is, I feel like over the last 6-12 months, especially in the UK, people are sort of starting to share a bit more, and that mental health piece is coming, I think, to the forefront a bit more.
In this section of the podcast, I of course wanted to talk about women in business. Now, there are so many women that have been on my podcast that I could speak to about this, but I really wanted to pull two great examples of leadership in really different industries. And I think you'll really enjoy these episodes. These people have so much character. They're so vivacious. They've changed the industry. They've built on their own. They've had career changes, setbacks, knockbacks, and they've really, really shaped themselves into be leaders within their field. So the two women I picked for this part are Cleo Lacey and Jada Caesar.
I think I grew up with, my dad was self-employed. My dad was a builder. And his whole ethos on life, he was a very larger than life man with the most incredible personality that you could have ever. He literally lit up a room. He was phenomenal. And he taught me that the most important thing in life is to love your job. And it doesn't matter what you do, but you have to have that that love when you get in the morning. He was so passionate about what he did. And I looked at my dad and I thought, oh my God, you know, that's how I want to feel. And my mum, bless her, she was very much a traditional stay-at-home wife. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But that just wasn't for me. I wanted that independence. I didn't want to have to ask a man for a handbag or for, you know, to put money in my car. For me, I love earning money and being completely independent and being able to do what I want. So I think the input of my dad wanting me to get a job that I was purely going to really enjoy and love. And then also seeing sort of my mum not really want that lifestyle, just wasn't personally for me. I think it just drove me to always work. I've always been a grafter, So age of 14, I was working in the pub, waitressing. I'd be babysitting every Friday and Saturday night. So whenever my friends were going out, I wasn't. I wanted to. I've always been a grafter and I've always earned my own money so that I could buy my first car and I could buy nice things. I've always been a magpie. I've always been attracted to beautiful stuff, whether it's jewellery or handbags. But I know I've got to work hard to buy myself those. So I've always had this ethos of working really hard. But it wasn't until my late 20s when I found the confidence to do it alone. And it was only really, again, my dad saying to me, just go for it. And I'm very much, I do take risks. Because I think you never progress in life unless you do. If you stay in the same place, you're only going to ever be in that same place. So for me, I was like, right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to set up by myself. This was 11 years ago, middle of the recession. There's lots of people that do what I do. There weren't then. There wasn't social media. There wasn't Instagram.
Yeah.
But I knew I had this passion and this drive and ambition. And I loved it. And I think if you possess those core qualities in whatever you do, you can't fail. Yes, it may take a bit longer to get to where you want to be. But if you've got that focus, that drive, that love and that passion that gets you up every day, looking forward to going to work, how can you go wrong? You can't.
It's actually really hard to define yourself in little sound bites because I think there's so much context that can be missed. And coming up with three words to describe myself since taking away the label of being a model or being a specific job title was really, really difficult. But I think I've always been a creator in many different ways. With my work, I've always been an advocate and used my platform to raise attention and bring a voice to charities and organizations and ideas that people never maybe considered or weren't accepting of or didn't know about. And Changemaker has always been my pioneering streak and seeing what could be done differently and how people can feel better about themselves with that change. I've got a stubborn streak to me as well. So when I feel like something just doesn't make sense, I don't hesitate to question it. For example, in the fashion industry, and I'm sure we'll get into more detail around that, but growing up and not seeing my curves or women that look like me or women that look like the majority of people in the street looked like, for me was really confusing and suggested that change and disruption needed to be had in that area.
The final section of the podcast, I really wanted just to look at some people and just ask them why they do what they do. What's the mindset piece behind your work? Why have you excelled in that space? What is it about your expertise that you love or you struggle with or you're learning? And I think I found four really good examples here. So of course, I've looked at Lauren Mann because she is an absolute force to be reckoned with, Lucy Sheridan, Cleo Lacey, and of course, my mom. So I hope you enjoy.
I'm Lauren Mann, born and raised Londoner, as I'm sure you can tell by my dulcet tones. But yeah, I'd say I'm a cancer campaigner and activist in some way. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2016. So we're coming up to my 5-year cancerversary this year. So 5 years since diagnosis, which is mental.
Wow.
And I was diagnosed at 31. The boobs I have now are the boobs I had then. Very small. I didn't think you could get breast cancer with small boobs. Spoiler alert, you can. And it hit me like a ton of bricks and it came as such a shock. And I, as you do, when something happens in life that is something that isn't the norm and you try and look for people who've experienced what you have and have been through what you have to take guidance and get empowerment and find some companionship, because it can feel quite scary and lonely. And I really could struggle to find women like me. There were a lot of women talking about breast cancer, but they were all in an elderly life stage or a more advanced life stage, as I like to say. Yeah. There were women who have had their children and like are thinking about retiring soon and have a very different like lifestyle than me. And I just wanted to find girls like me, someone that I could imagine sitting down in the pub with a pint and going, what the hell is yes. going on? Can I swear on this podcast, Kirsty?
Yeah, of course you can.
All right, what the fuck is going on? And I really struggled to find it, but also not only that, it became really apparent to me very quickly as soon as the word got out and I started telling people, and the perception of what cancer looks like was actually really damaging to my mental health. It was, people were treating me in certain ways and people were, you know, looking at me like I was literally about to drop dead in front of them. And I thought, do you know what? I'm not having this. Like, this isn't my perception of what I'm going through in my head. This is something I've got to get. The treatment is something I've got to get through to live. So I'm not seeing it as an end of road thing. I'm seeing it as a bump in the road thing. So I didn't want people to treat me any differently. And I wanted to take control of that treatment and perception of me and my experience. So I started talking about my experience online under the hashtag Girl Versus Cancer, started selling a few t-shirts to raise money for charity. And 5 years down the line, it's its own amazing thing. It's a supportive cancer network that does campaigns around the lesser known, talked about things of the cancer experience, whether that be like impact on sex, finances. We talk about like bowel cancer and getting literally into the nitty gritty and the dirt of cancer and not being afraid to be really open about what that looks like, but doing it in a way that isn't scaremongery, that's very real. We've raised loads of money for charity. I say we, it's me. I go, we have. But we're on the precipice now of a rebrand and a whole relaunch, and I'm really excited about that now. When I say we, there is more help now, which is good. So that's what I've done for the last 5 years. But also I have a podcast on the BBC called You Mean the Big C.
All of my work is absolutely focused on helping people stop comparing themselves to other people, stop comparing themselves to a perfect version of themselves, or stop comparing themselves to their past self. So it's kind of like a bit of a triangle or triumvirate, I think is the posh word for it, that the work kind of addresses there. In terms of what led me to this, it's definitely been a case of study what I need to know. Comparison has been something I have experienced a lot in my life. And I can remember from an early age, actually, having a bit of more of a critical view about, like, if my colouring in was as good as other toddlers, or my body was developing in puberty, like by, you know, the people I saw around me, or how I was doing in my grades, how I was doing in work, relationships, etc. And it always been scanning, I suppose, other people and ranking myself against others. Where it got particularly acute was in my late 20s. And I attended a school reunion. Now, the school reunion itself was a lovely day. It was nothing like those kind of American films where it all goes wrong and there's mean girls and blah, blah. It was nothing like that. It was a really lovely, fun day. It was the day after when I kind of went to my, it was all about Facebook then. So the dark ages, but it was all about Facebook then, Face TV. Instagram was just really a twinkle in our eye getting started. But I'd accepted and sent a lot of new friend requests to obviously like my school cohort. So my Facebook feed looked very, very different indeed from then on. And it was from there that, having managed my comparison to a point, a bit through denial, a bit through being a bit overly nosy, I suppose, on a good day. Excuse me. It was after that point that I woke up in this like Las Vegas of comparison. And it was all, you know, my comparison habit was always on. There was always something to gorge on, to visit, to be alerted to. And overnight, it got to a depth and took hold of me in a way which probably lasted maybe 1 or 2 years, actually. And sparked on by what I could see my old school friends doing, and, you know, taking a very much over the top, way disproportionate interest in all of their lives, but also was reinforced by what I was seeing around me and the other circles that I kind of moved in as well. So having really spiraled down for about 18 months or so, perhaps a little bit longer, it came to a point, and I remember it really well, actually. It's sometimes funny, you have these wake up moments in your life. And I must say, I think I can count the times I've had these wake up moments on one hand, and I'm, you know, 38 now. I do remember in that moment thinking this has to stop, just staring at my phone. I think I was fully dressed under the duvet. It was a lovely Saturday morning. And I was just looking at all these feeds and feeling absolutely rubbish. And I heard this voice, really, it was almost auditory, saying, this has to stop. Like, stop it. Mm. And from that moment, as simple as it sounds, but as complex as it has been, I realised, or posed myself the question, I suppose, if I could think and feel myself into this, can I think and feel myself out of it? I was working in the advertising industry at the time. And so the first port of call for me was just Waterstones, which is a bookshop in the UK. Yeah. So the first port of call was a bookshop. Then I would look on YouTube for motivational videos. And this was, you know, 8 years ago, may as well have been 40 years ago. The wellbeing industry in the UK not there, basically. And as you might pick up from my big vowels, I'm from Leeds. And it was at the time very, very London-centric and very fragmented. And that I kind of felt like I was really struggling for information, but kind of kept up the hunt for the info. And how, you know, that kind of developed was books and videos, and turned to attending short hour-long workshops or perhaps a seminar, then perhaps going to London for a longer event. And then, you know, took me to Google to try and go further in my understanding, and started looking at trainings and qualifications. And I never had the intention necessarily to be self-employed ever. I will say this to people a fair bit. Part of me wants to kind of, it sounds a bit disparaging to say, oh, no one's more surprised than I am that I'm doing this. I'm not now, because I feel like I'm really in my purpose. But yes, I would never have described myself as an entrepreneur ever, ever. I believe that each of us has a match flame available to us of entrepreneurial spirit. And if you choose to look after that, it can become a big roaring fire. But I was in corporate life. That's where I thought all my time and my career was going to be. But I kept on getting these nudges, which I know now were intuitive kind of cues. I was like, right, do this, do that, follow this next, look into this. Oh, wouldn't it be interesting if I found like new thought processes kind of coming in about what my future could be? And it was a process of following those very tentatively. I never, you know, the day came when I realized I needed to leave my job. I never knew I was leaving that career. It's just a few things that happened in that workplace. I thought, I'm not sticking around from here. But that's been sort of the journey to today, in terms of following the next step, then the next step, then the next step, and giving myself the confidence to feel into what could be possible, and acting on that information. So I wasn't that person that resigned and then went full time. It took me a few years to be full time in my business, but it was a real process of discovery.
I think one of the key things you have to be good at to do my job is to be able to read people and feel that empathy that person may be going through. And then you know how to guide them. Some people I push because I can see that it's in them and they want to be there. Other people, I know that I've got to take them in baby steps. So you've really got to, everybody is very individual. It's all bespoke. And you've really got to be able to read that person and how they're responding to you, the situation. Some people find the whole process quite emotional. Some people are naturally hoarders and their wardrobe is full of memories. And, you know, they've still got their dress from their 21st birthday party or the first date night that they had with their husband. So with women, it's a much more emotional journey. With men, it's more straightforward. It's, does it do a job? It's got to be, you know, I need to tell them the reasons why they need to buy it. And then they're like, right, that's fine. Okay. It's got to be more practical. There's not a lot of emotion involved with clothes and shopping with men. Yeah, obviously the odd one, but with women, it's just a completely different journey. So you've got to read that. And a lot of my clients are mums, and they are in a totally different ballpark as well, because having a child can affect your confidence and self-esteem hugely. You know, your body shape does change, and you kind of feel like you were this person before a baby, and after a baby, you kind of lose it. You know, you just feel like you're a little bit lost. You actually don't know who you are anymore. Mm. Your wardrobe's got to be practical because you're on the floor. You know, you've got to be in your leggings crawling around after the baby. But equally, you still want to feel sexy, and you still want to, you know, feel like the woman that your husband married all those years ago. And so it's just working with the individual, I'd say.
Through your teenage years, I think because we're very similar, we used to argue quite a lot and disagree with each other, shall we say. Especially first thing on the morning before you went to college.
And the hormones. Oh, my goodness.
Lots of hormones flying all over and not really understanding what's going on. And, you know, it's a new journey for you, but it also was a new journey for me, not having had a teenager before and dealing with that how best I thought was right and perhaps not always getting it right. But from there, you know, through your university years, we grew closer. And then when you got into the big wide world of working, I think you matured very quickly and we got on really, really well. And we have not, we've not argued really for a long time, and we've just grown and grown and grown closer and closer. Mm-hmm. And through everything, you know, it's through the good times and it's also through the bad times. Mm. And it's nice to know that we can reach out to each other and we're always there. And I really do treasure that as well, because not everybody has what we have. And I think it's very special. And it's just lovely how close we are. Mm. You know, it's more like friends than mother, daughter, but sometimes that's also needed.
Mm. Sometimes I'm also the mother now.
Sometimes you are.
Yeah. When she's had too much Prosecco.
Oh, I don't know what you mean.
I won't out you yet.
Oh my goodness. Even pulling together this podcast has been really emotional for me. When I started out, it was a dream to even have a few downloads. I cannot believe I have tens of thousands of downloads. I really am so close to getting to the six figures. I've been so supported, so held. Just people have been incredible within this journey, and it truly, truly means the world to me. Every listen, every share, every moment that somebody takes the time to get in touch with me and say, this really helped me, or I found this incredible woman because of you and now I'm following her and I love her. This is what it's all about. You know, take away all the bullshit in the world, take away all the things that are going on. Isn't it all about just coming together and supporting each other? So I'm so grateful, and please know that there's no preferential treatment of these episodes. I adore every single guest, every single episode, but I try to pick really relevant themes to celebrate. And so hopefully you found this really useful. Now, of course, you know what time it is. You know what part of the podcast it is. So I want you to get really comfortable, really cozy. It's time for your mini meditation. And I want you to just close the eyes today. Let's take a moment to reflect together. Let's take a moment to look at just how far we have come. Take this moment, slow down, close the eyes. Notice how the body is feeling right now. Notice how the mind is feeling. Take a minute to slow down. Just a moment here. Acknowledging that you're here within your practice and taking a moment to recognize that, to champion that. So many people neglect their meditation practice, but not here. We are together right now in this moment. Breathe. Really acknowledge where you are. And how do you feel today? Coming up for you. How has this week been for you? How are you feeling? What feels good? What are we letting go of? What can we release? And as you settle into the body, into the practice, I want you to just imagine yourself just here in this peaceful place with no expectation. We expect to feel something life-changing within our meditation, and actually we should expect to feel nothing. To feel still, to feel calm, to feel totally at peace. Releasing the expectation. Take a moment now and breathe. Releasing expectation. Taking that moment to thank yourself. You showed up today. You're here. You're committed to your development. You're committed to yourself. Be proud of that. Take this moment, draw in the breath, and thank yourself for being in your practice. I truly, truly thank you from the bottom of my heart for all of your support. This is only the beginning. I'm so excited. I'm honored and humbled as ever. If you enjoyed this episode, please do share, tell a friend, tell your bestie, tell a colleague, and I will see you again next week.